Broadcasting from the megacity metropolis of Toronto, you are now listening to the Cave of Solitude. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and I am joined by my very distinguished guest, Daphne J.
Daphne J it is.
Or would you prefer Lady J?
I like the Lady J.
You like Lady J?
Yeah.
So you want to go by it yet?
I feel like curtsying now.
How's it going, Lady J?
Good. Good. It's happening.
It's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's new and exciting in your life?
Read a comic book.
Okay. Tell us the comic book.
These restrictions.
Sorry. I want you to tell us the comic book.
I read a comic book.
Okay.
It's called Miss Marvel.
Very nice. I'd like to do an episode on Miss Marvel because I read it recently myself, and I think that is a book that is filled with possible discussion on varying topics that I'd like to get into with you.
Yeah.
But before we record that episode, we're gonna get that. That's just a little preview of what's to come, maybe in a following episode. But today. Tonight's episode, or today's episode, depending when you're listening to it, maybe in the morning, in your car, on your way to work, we are going to be talking about the Comic-Con, Toronto Comic-Con, that just came into town this weekend.
That came, saw, it, conquered.
It conquered.
Live long and prosper. Also, by the way.
Tell us.
I like the cosplay situation that happens at these things. It's probably one of my favorite things. No, I take it back. The art,
sketch duels.
Those are my favorite things.
We will get into that because I want to get into some of the things you enjoy. Because this year was one of the first years in a while that you returned back and going to a Comic-Con with me. You went to the very first one that I've ever went to. And I think we were both a little bit overwhelmed by the crowd of people.
Mm-hmm.
And Comic-Con is one of those things, like the one that just passed, the Toronto Comic-Con that took place at the Metro Toronto Convention Center, this was the springtime one, taking place in March. There's the big Fan Expo that's in the summertime, which...
When is it taking place?
That takes place September 3rd to 6th this year, 2015, same location.
That sounds like a long weekend to me.
It might be, it's usually held on the Labor Day long weekend, the summertime con. And the Fan Expo that takes place in Toronto, they say is third biggest in North America, so it draws quite a large crowd of people.
And that's the first one we went to?
That was the first one we went to maybe 8 or 9 years ago, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So now this con was always a little bit smaller, a little bit more comic book focused. Didn't draw as big of a crowd, but it was good for the comic book hobbyists. But this year it felt like it had grown. It seemed like a larger crowd than ever. The traffic within the convention center and the way that they had set up the convention center almost felt like the summertime con. How did you find the crowd to be for yourself? Like you came with me on the Sunday. I went with Jay Siegel. We went together on the Friday, the opening day, and that was from 4 to 9. But on the Sunday, we went from morning till closing. Morning till closing. So how did you find the crowd? What was your experience like?
It was a little bit overwhelming. There was a hustle and bustle, and people with like their costumes on top of that. They're like crawling on top of you.
Mm-hmm.
I thought overall the staff, like I thought it was very, very,
regimented.
Like it was very like, you couldn't even stop
yeah.
to tie your shoe without these
security guards.
People going off.
I wanted to stop you from saying something else about
this. This is a family show, kids. Yeah, but no, it was just like, okay, get off my back. Or when I went to go to the cafeteria or the section where they had the food.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want... I was already in the con. Yeah. I was already in there. I stepped out for a sketch duel, wanted to make my way back in. Now there's double
lineup.
The crowd.
Yeah.
And I just want to go to where the food is. And the guy's like, nope.
It's very traffic. It feels it's very like traffic controlled.
I just
want to
get a hot dog.
Just open the doors. Let us in.
No, you got to line up. Seriously?
Yeah.
I wait 20 minutes to get in so I can get a dog.
You can get a dog. Overpriced dog.
Oh, $5. I can get the Italian sausage on the street from my guy who gets me the Jack Daniels barbecue sauce for $3.75 with the works.
With the drink for $5.
Oh. Well, anyway, that was my little gripe.
You digress. Let's get into the con. Okay, so the crowd for you is one of those things that you have to.
It's already a lot of people, and then their stuff is big. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I enjoy it. I like it. It's an eye catcher for sure. It's a part of the fun, but you're lined up with like Jabba the Hutt.
Jabba the Hutt.
Whose tail is down to here. Then you got like the five Ghostbusters behind you with all their guns and stuff. I mean, it's all cool, but like when you're the only one, like, and I thought I was going like, you know, with my Batgirl t-shirt with my little cape, like I thought I was doing it, you know? And they put me to shame with all their big getup. But anyway, I had fun. It's just, it's a lot, and everything's tall. Everything's tall. Like, remember that t-shirt stand?
Yeah.
Like, it was like a box.
Yeah.
It was open, but from both sides, in and out.
It's just a little daunting, I guess, for a person that doesn't know what to expect.
And each stand or wherever they're renting, like, they're right next to each other. Yeah. There's no really breathing space.
Yeah.
So, you're right. They're, like, maximizing, I guess, the space, but it's very tight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what I want to
ask... I had fun overall. I'm not trying to be
negative. We'll get into the things you like, because you did mention some things to me that you said that you wanted to share with people. So, having... since we've started this podcast together and you've become my main host with me, my partner in crime, or crime fighting, if you will. You've been reading a lot more comics. You've been more invested probably than ever before in the culture and understanding of the art and the storytelling and diversifying things that you've read. So now that you've gone, having done all of that and being a little bit more immersed in it, and then going to a Comic-Con now, having a little bit more of that knowledge and appreciation for certain things, did you find that your appreciation for things that you saw there was more?
Yes. I feel like now I had a reason to be there rather than just kind of stumbling upon a find. Like, now I have a purpose. Like, now I have a mission to find this particular thing. And then when you come across it, when you find it, when you see it, even if I can't afford it,
yeah,
just seeing it,
yeah,
like actually being able to touch it, it's an experience. Because now there's a little bit more background,
right,
to
the story of these creations.
Yeah.
Because in the past, like, you always supported me in my hobby of collecting comics, and I always say I really appreciate that, because, you know, it's something, if you're not into collecting things, you really got to tolerate another person doing that. But this time I didn't feel like it was you felt like you were tagging along. This time it felt like
we were there together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was really cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
So what are some of the things that because you're still not, when it comes to, like, the hunting through the long boxes, you're kind of like, okay, you got this, you got that.
Yeah.
Where do I start? What do
That's
I look for?
That's a bit
for?
Of a piss off. Like, Eric, what about this? Got it. Got it. Eric, what? Got it. I actually like looking for toys.
Okay.
I like those stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because with the books, I can't. And I only know that you've ever recommended good stuff. Like, you bring in good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I trust your opinion on the reads that you take on, but I do like toys. I like the action figures. I like when we put them together and we make like a little story on our shelf. Like, I love my Batmobile.
Yeah.
I have two. I have the Tumbler and I have the Hot Wheels one.
So you're, from what you've said to me in the past, is you don't mind the collection as long as it can be appreciated, as long as it's...
That's my biggest thing.
Yeah.
Because especially with, and I guess, again, we'll get into what we did at the con,
yeah,
but like a lot of artwork. I appreciate the artwork. I love sketch duels. Seeing the art come to take form,
okay,
I become mesmerized. Like, as much as it's overwhelming being surrounded by all these people, when I get focused on what this particular person is creating, I don't see or hear anything. I'm just immersed in this creation that's happening,
mm-hmm,
in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoy that. So when you do find that artist that you like, when you get him to sign your comic book, when you have all these things. Like, it's a shame when people can't display it the way it should be displayed. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big fan of, I don't like clutter. And I know with this particular hobby, that can become a problem. Mm-hmm. But as long as it's displayed in an organized fashion and it's accessible, like, I want to see the artwork. I want to appreciate what you've invested in, what you've put your time in. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I understand how it can easily happen where you have all this stuff and then you just have to store it in long boxes in the garage or in the attic. But, like, that's a value for some people.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be stowed away and collecting dust if it means something. About. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like appreciating the things that we have.
So some of the highlights of the show. I'm going to start with Friday. You weren't with me on Friday, but me and Jay Siegel went. And one of the coolest costumes we saw right when we started was a guy dressed as Rhino. Yes, Rhino from Spider-Man.
Really?
Yeah, he had gone all out with this costume. And Jay's goal for the night was trying to get a photo with him. We didn't end up finding him, kind of like the Cassandra Cain that you were trying to find on Sunday in the Batgirl. But that was a really cool costume.
Was it like metal like, or was it
metal?
Like
it was like the foam like that.
So he looked like Barney with a horn.
Not Barney. He looked like Rhino, but it was that old school Rhino costume from the comics that was like, that's such a dumb costume. But
so he did like it. Dignified it. It was
no.
It did was, it?
There was no way to dignify the costume, but the effort that was put into it, to
did it look handmade?
It did, but it didn't. It looked. It was a good job. He did a good job with it. Because for all intents and purposes, that costume is ridiculous, even from a character standpoint in the books.
Yeah.
It's silly. It's something you look at, you laugh at. So this was... It was a sight to behold. Let's just put it that way. One of the things that I found, one of my big finds for the con, I did a little shopping there, was the Treasury Edition Marvel DC team up of Superman versus the Amazing Spider-Man, the very first one written by Jerry Conway and art by Ross Andrew. It was a book that I've always wanted to have. I would see pictures of it online or in magazines. And when I did see it at a con these last couple of times that I've went, it's been like way out of my price range. And I always like, man, that's a book I'm probably never going to get. So I found it for a decent price. I bought a couple of trades from this dealer. And all in all, I got a really good deal on it. I'm not going to say what I paid, but it was a lot less than
what
people...
Why won't you tell?
Like, I don't want to... Yeah, I don't know.
Is that a part of your, like, that's your thing? Like, that's your nugget?
No, because, when you collect comics, to some people, they'll never understand how you would pay $20 for a single issue or $30 for an old, like, people might not get that, but for people who collect comics, they know, like, oh wow, that is a pretty good deal.
But that's what I'm saying, the people that hear this, like,
okay, so for all
you don't have to if you want to.
I'm not going to, but I was very happy with my purchase and I don't feel guilty about it at all, so it was a good deal.
I have to say, you are a smart shopper. Like, even when I'm like, Eric, you found it, you're like, no,
I shop till I drop, though. That's the problem. I do.
True, but you make your dollar stretch.
Yeah, I do. That,
and I think
that
that's a smart comic book collector. Because, like you said, you can very easily get lost in this world of
finding it, paying whatever they ask. Yeah. No, you gotta kind of... And in the past, I had made those mistakes. So, having been a sucker in the past, you kind of learn from, okay, I know I can find this for this price now. Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to make sure that I look a little harder. So, that was a good find. I bought a couple of other trades from... You try to look for your best deals, your 40% off, U.S. cover price kind of thing. Because everywhere now, the dollar's struggling when it comes to bookstores, especially comic book shops. All the books have gone up in price because of our dollar dropping in comparison to the American one. So, you got to be a little bit more cautious of where you're shopping. So, I usually go to secondhand bookstores or discount bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
So, I found some good stuff that day. We went to two sketch duels. One was really impressive with Ken Lashley and Leonard Kirk. And it had just been Leonard Kirk in there for about the first 20 minutes talking with the crowd. And Ken Lashley didn't seem like he was going to show up. He comes in 25 minutes later. There was maybe a half hour left
but
for
those,
him to draw.
Yeah, those sketch duels are, 45 minutes?
45 minutes to an hour, maybe. So he comes, you know, walking in, and he doesn't look like he's feeling well. He even says, like, I'm not feeling well today. Sorry, guys, I'm late. And they're like, how much time is left? They're like, you got 25 minutes, buddy. And he's like, all right, I'll see how much I can do. And he puts together this awesome, who was it that he drew? He drew a Doctor Doom from Fantastic Four, because that's what the crowd had requested from Leonard Kirk. And then he had put together an amazing Wolverine.
So two.
He did two. Two sketches in 25 minutes. But they were stunning. Like, absolutely stunning pictures. And even Leonard Kirk's was a great drawing. Like, it was a phenomenal piece that he put together. But Ken Lashley, like, pum, 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 just like...
Did he even cut? Did he ink it? Did he color it? He inked it,
oh yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah, it was...
Imagine he would have actually showed up on time. Like, he must have been...
And that's the thing, right? Is that there's some people who develop a skill and are very good artists, and there's some people that just have a knack, that have a talent that you just can't train.
Oh, I wish I could do that.
Yeah, it was really fun to see. The first one we went to, it was really good as well. But, oh, you know what it was? We walked in a little bit late, and it was my fault. Because I was wheeling and dealing for the Superman, Spider-Man book. So I made JC go wait for me a little bit. And we walked in, and they were doing... It was Mike McCone. And
did you get a...
we didn't get a ticket for
you
it.
You didn't get a raffle no, ticket?
They were doing Conan. They were doing Conan. It was Tom Rainey, Mike McCone, and one other gentleman who I didn't get his name.
I got rid of the schedule. Sorry, buddy.
But you know what? They weren't the ones scheduled for that one. They had filled in. But it was still a really good sketch duel.
They did Conan.
They did Conan, yeah.
And?
Mike McCone's Conan was, it was cover worthy. Like, something you would definitely want to put on your wall. It was a beautiful piece. And Tom Rainey's...
Conan had that bowl cut haircut, right? That like, it was kind of like a bob?
No.
Who was that one?
He-Man?
He-Man, that's the one.
Yeah, He-Man. No.
He-Man.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
But they did a Conan, and they were both really good.
So who's the one that Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Conan. Conan did...
Did anybody draw Arnold?
No, they didn't
draw Conan? Arnold.
No.
That would have been funny.
But they're saying that he's going to be playing Conan again in an upcoming movie, on a side note.
Well, his face has been stretched out. I guess he could do it again.
Probably. So, that was Friday. Friday's a bit of a shorter day.
What finds did you have on Friday?
That was the Amazing Spider-Man vs. Superman day.
Oh, okay.
And I found, at that same stand, I found Justice League Tower of Babel. It's been out of print, this particular trade that I found. And I got it for like $10, which was a really good deal to me. Brand new. I know it's been reprinted in other Justice League volumes, but, I was happy to find this one because the other volumes, I already have pieces of those stories in the ones that have been reprinted. So I didn't want to have a duplicate just so I can get this story.
Mm-hmm.
So I had found something I've been looking for about 2 years. And that's always like...
Okay. I think we touched on it, but just give us your feeling of that moment when you find that thing that you've been searching for and you get it for like... like now you know you gotta finagle a deal and then you get it for your price. What's that feeling like? Express.
It's like hunting for treasure. It really is, because you don't know, you know things in the back of your head that you want to find and you've kind of given up on and thinking that you're just not going to find it. And when you do, it's that hunt of looking for something that you've been trying to find for so long. And then when you get that piece to add to your collection or that book that you've been dying to read and it's been out of your reach, whether price point or whether it's out of print, like, it's such a feeling of satisfaction to have it.
Even if it's in like its most mangled condition,
depends on the book. That really depends on... No, I wouldn't want anything mangled.
Not like pages are falling out, but if the creases are kind of bent, the corners are a little...
I still try to shop for some type of a quality.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that, okay, it's not in pristine mint condition, and I can't, you know, but then that's when you got to pay top dollar for it. So if I can find a copy that I can still, in some way, it'll maintain its value at some point,
mm-hmm.
that's good enough for me. and okay. I can get a deal on it. So I don't end up paying hundreds of dollars for something, but I pay something that's like, you know, I can live with that. And mm-hmm. it's, you know, I could probably resell this one day if I had to for more.
Yeah.
That's when it feels good. Like, we saw some books that I had bought a complete set of six for, I bought it for $1 a piece.
Yeah.
And then I'm seeing either the set be sold for $100 yeah. or a single issue be sold for $100. Yeah. And I'm like, win. Right? I won.
Winning.
Yeah, exactly. So, Sunday, what are some of your highlights for yourself?
My highlight on Sunday, the sketch duel, we talked about that.
Yeah, that was a good one.
It was really good. Good.
We had, do you remember the guys?
Yes, Mario Lopez. No, Mario Cuenco.
No.
Marcus something. Alan. No, Kirby.
No, not Jack Kirby. Kirby's dead.
What's his name? The guy that you say is always, he's so nice. He's always very pleasant.
Carrie Andrews?
That's why I said Kirby.
Kirby, yeah.
Carrie Andrews, he wears glasses. Yeah. Nice haircut.
Nice. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah. I thought it was hilarious how he was like, what time is it? How much time is left? And then like 2 seconds later.
What did they
How
draw?
Are we doing with time? They drew Hellboy.
Yeah.
They drew Hellboy.
I shouted out for you your Green request, Arrow. Green Arrow.
Yeah.
Which Green Arrow would you have wanted? The one from the television show or the comic version?
I don't know. That's the fun part, I think, because you get to see what their rendition of that character is. You know what okay. I mean? So I...
You just want to see Green Arrow.
Yeah. I just think he would be a fun character to draw, right? With his bow and his arrows and the hood. Like, he has a lot going on for him. So that would have been fun. But they did Hellboy. The other artist...
So before you continue, I'm just going to list the people in the sketch duo. It was Carrie Andrews, who's doing Iron Fist right now. David Marquez and Clayton Crane.
See? I told you.
You weren't. Oh, you said Mario Lopez.
Well, I remember what he was wearing. He was wearing a denim shirt. He had long hair. And then Clayton had extremely long hair.
Mm-hmm.
It was like he was hiding behind his hair almost. He barely said anything. But when he did, he was funny.
Yeah. And each of their renditions,
I think Clayton,
renderings of Hellboy.
Clayton's rendition was like, it was almost like water.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They were all awesome. Really good.
They were all amazing.
Yeah, really good.
But yeah, that was good.
And then right after that was Yannick Paquette and Stéphane Roux.
Two French guys.
One is actually from France and one is a French Canadian.
Canadian, yeah.
And they were doing Incredible Hulk sketch.
They could not stop talking, those two.
Chatterboxes.
The other two, the other three, Yankovic and...
No, Yannick Paquette?
Yep. No, the other one.
Carrie Andrews?
Carrie Andrews and Guacamo there.
No.
What's his name?
David Marquez.
Yeah.
And Clayton Crane.
Yeah. They were very, like, they barely put their heads up, you know what I mean?
They were very conscious of time.
They were very conversational, they answered questions, they were funny, they messed with each other a little bit, but they were very cognizant of what they were there to do.
Right.
They wanted to win.
Right.
Kind of thing, right?
Yeah, they wanted to do a good job.
I found that they were just, anytime a question was...
They put their pen down.
They stopped drawing. They were literally stopped.
It was good, though. That was one of the best sketch duels I went to because of... For people who were artists or who are artists and want to learn technique, they really gave you a lot of good insider info of how to get...
The type of pencils they used.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
I think if you have some artistic background, that would have been a sketch duel that would have been very much appreciated. It was in general,
yeah,
but
it was one of my favorites, not so much because the piece that they did was like the most stunning piece of artwork. It was more of how giving they were to the audience in really trying to express themselves and share their creative process.
The only thing I didn't like about this year's sketch duel, and I guess based upon what you told me, this is what's been going on for the past couple of years, The first sketch duel I went to, I think there was two of them, and they did the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
But each one had their own projector.
Yeah, so you could
see. So you can actually see them drawing as this thing is coming, too. So, you know, they're talking to you, but you're seeing these lines, and then these lines all of a sudden become hair.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the shadow becomes something
and
else.
It looks so, like a mess. It's like, what are they doing?
Yeah. But, you know, and then you see the colors and you see the shadowing and everything. I like seeing it happen. This year, like I said, the past couple of years, everybody's drawing, but then they'll stop them and they'll take each art piece and show the progression.
Yeah.
And so they would take it and show it, and then everyone's like, ooh. And the next time, they show, ah. Yeah. And then at the end. So, it was cool.
Will you come back with me for Fan Expo?
If it's bigger than this one, I would probably go.
For the workshops?
That's what I would want
to go. Yeah, because they're worth it. They're worth it.
That's what I would want to do.
Yeah.
But it was good. It was good.
So, Sunday, my favorite find of that day was something you actually found for me.
You're welcome.
Thank you. It started off good. I found a Crisis on Infinite Earths issue 1 for a good price from George Perez, Marv Wolfman. That was a cool find. But you found me a Batman and the Outsiders issue number 1. And it was something that I had heard spoke about on another podcast during the week. And to have found that issue, that first issue, for, it was a good price. It was the end of the day sale. He gave it to me for $5.
Yeah, man.
It was good.
In good condition, too. Great, and it was the only one in the Batman and Outsiders folder. Yeah. It was the only one.
And you kind of like, hey, what's this? And I was just like stunned at the find. It was a great find. So that was a really cool, that we posted that picture on the Cave of Solitude Instagram page. So thank you for that.
You are very welcome.
That's going to find a very
nice place. It's like I made your dreams come true.
You did.
No, because you were talking about it. You heard of it, and then it just happened.
That's right. So that was my favorite find for Sunday. I completed a few other sets. I've completed my Death
in the Family
set. Mm-hmm. I was missing one issue for that. We found it.
Issue number 4, right? You were missing?
Yeah, part 4 with the Joker on the cover. Anything else you remember me finding? I know I brought my little brother with me for the first time. It was his first Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And he got his own commission done of Deadpool, and he found a Deadpool action figure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to get him into the comic books, but I just don't know if it's going to happen. But that's okay. It's a start.
He likes Star Wars, though.
He does. He likes Star Wars. He likes video games. So
you got him into Star Wars.
Yes, I did. So I think it'll... just a little bit more convincing and manipulating. And we'll see what happens. But he had a good time, and that was cool to see. So this year, because this was the first Comic-Con post Cave of Solitude podcast, I thought, I want to go and I want to try to interview some creators. So I went, when I went on Friday, I said, I'm going to go big. I got to muster up the courage to ask some of these artists, because I really wanted to give an opportunity to interview artists, local artists, local talents, people who are trying to really make their own splash right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, you know what? Muster up the courage. I'm going to go to the top dog. So I went to Mr. Neil Adams, legendary comic book artist. His table actually has a banner that says legendary comic book artist. And for those who don't know Neil Adams, he basically redefined Batman post the television show in the 60s when it was campy. They brought Batman back. Him and Denny O'Neill brought Batman back to his roots. Along with that, he also is very influential in the Green Arrow character that people know and love today.
He also wears that same blue shirt everywhere he goes.
You've seen him on Comic Book Man. Yes, he wears the same blue shirt.
He was wearing it again on Sunday.
That's his thing. He probably has like 10 of them.
Good for him.
Yeah. But he was extremely friendly. I had a really interesting conversation with him about being on Comic Book Man and podcasts that he's been on. And I went out on a limb and I said, you know, Mr. Adams, I got a question for you. I said, I got a podcast that I've started and I was wondering if I could do an interview with you for it.
And drum roll.
He shut me down.
Okay, he didn't.
No, he. But it was in a fair way because he said, you know, you got to go through my studio. You have to contact my daughter who runs my studio, and they're the ones who decide which shows that
because
I show up on.
Because they want him to be on big ones.
On high-profile ones, obviously. And we're going to get to that point. But and my thing was, if I get Neil Adams on the podcast, that puts me right into that category because I can go up to anybody after that and say, listen, Neil Adams has been on the show, so you might want to try being on this.
Okay, but on the flip side,
he said, because I said to him, you know, it's not for an hour long. It's just, you know, an on-location, five-minute type of interview asking you what you've been working on and how it's coming along kind of thing. And he said that could come to him at the end of the day. And it would be a possibility. I didn't end up doing that because at the end of the day, you know, he has been working. He's not a 30-year-old artist anymore. He's there with his wife. And I'm sure by the end of the con, he's tired and wants to go home. But I appreciated him being kind and giving us his time and having really, what's the word? Not personal, but, you know, just regular conversation, real friendly, regular conversation with me.
So basically, we pumped up our audience to make it seem as though they were going to hear a Neil Adams, Adams interview, and nothing.
Yeah. And I'm sorry if I hyped it up that way, and it didn't come through, but I know next time, I've mustered up enough courage to go back to a lot of these different creators and just ask them, right?
Sure.
But what we did get to do was talk to two artists who did draw some sketches for me and for Jay Siegel and my brother, Mr. Sam Agro and Marvin Law. And those interviews we do have, and I really want to say thank you to the both of them for giving me a little bit of their time and their busy schedule at the con, because, you know, people are constantly approaching them and asking them for possible sketches and the like, and they were very gracious and kind in giving me some of their time. For the last three cons that I've gone to, I've gotten Sam Agro to draw me a couple of different sketches of some of my favorite characters, and I've always been very pleased with the stuff that he's given me. So I thought, you know what, why not do a little showcase on these artists who have always been really kind to me and have been friendly and outgoing in their conversation. So from this point of the episode, I'm going to insert their interviews that I was able to record with them on location at the convention center. So first up, I'm going to interview Marvin Law, and then after that, we'll hear from Sam Agro. So we're here at the Toronto Comic Con. It's March 22nd at the Metro Toronto Convention Center, and we're with Marvin Law. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
It's nice to have you here and for you to take some time out to do an interview with us.
Not a problem.
So how's the con going for you so far?
It's always good. Like, you spend the whole weekend being a geek. It's just how hard could it really be?
Yeah. How old were you when you got into comic books? What was your first, give us your comic book origin.
I was probably about 4 years old. I have an older cousin. He's about 8 years older than I am. He collected comic books. I saw his comic book collection, and I was hooked ever since. From there on in, it's just been my drug.
What was the thing that you... What was the books he collected? What got you hooked on it?
He was collecting the John Byrne plus Claremont X-Men run. It was probably the more seminal run of the book. I fell in love. He showed me... This is back in 1986, and I'm like... When I was growing up, he showed me Crisis of the Infinite Earths, he showed me Watchmen, he showed me Dark Knight Returns.
That's probably the best time, right, to get into comics.
That was pretty intense. Like, that's a really strong period in comic book history. So. Yeah.
What would you say was your favorite, though?
My favorite growing up as a kid, I had two favorites, was The Hulk and The Flash.
What was it about them?
I just thought the fact that The Hulk was just got angry and threw stuff around and did whatever he wanted to, and Flash could just run really fast.
So was it Barry Allen Flash or Wally West?
It was
Flash?
Barry, and I was heartbroken when Barry died in the crisis. Broke my soul, and then, yeah, and then became, most of, for most of my adult life, it's been Wally, actually, so.
So which one do you prefer now?
I actually don't mind. I love Wally. I enjoyed Barry as well. So other one works as long as like you tell good stories.
Right. How are you enjoying the show? Since you're a big Flash fan, the show is now.
I'm a go. That's the saddest part. I actually don't watch the show.
Really?
I don't.
Is it a time factor?
It's just there are only so many geek shows you fit in a day. It's just like. I have four shows I really watched, and it was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, Constantine, and Gotham.
Okay.
And there's so much catching, because I know if you had to watch Flash, you'd have to re-watch Green Arrow.
Okay.
And so, like, I'm already behind on Green Arrow, I have to catch up, so it's like, okay, you know what, I have to catch up on Green Arrow to get to Flash.
Right,
so it's
right,
like,
right.
That's at least a season two of just trying to catch up to get to that point.
Understandable. The payoff is good. If you're a Flash fan, you're going to like it.
Yeah.
So, you're from Toronto, right?
Yeah, born and raised.
So, what are some of the things that are unique for Toronto comic culture? What do you think makes it different from other places?
Oh, just the sheer number of comic creators just in the general area. I can at least name 40 off the top of my head that are from the GTA area. So, it's a for a population that we have, the concentration of comic creators in the area is really intense.
So, does that make it more challenging for you then to separate yourself from them, or is it good because there's a big group of you all supporting each other?
I think it can be both at times. Like, we're all competitive, but in a friendly way, where we're all trying to do our best work.
Right.
And but then, like, we all support each other by doing, like, whenever we have projects, we all go out and, like, oh, we're launching a book signing, come on out, have fun. Or we all go drinking or go drawing together and things like that. Like, so it's all stuff like that. We all hang out together, our friends.
So your entrance into the industry,
mm-hmm.
What was it? What was the process for people that are on the come up themselves?
I was lucky. I got into the comic industry in this really odd way, because I would just graduate high school. I just started my first year at art college, and I wandered around one of the early fan expos that was still in the hotel, and I ran across these guys at Artist Alley who had a table, and they were just talking to one of the editors there, and he mentioned. I think we were just talking about comic book nerd stuff. And then he asked, what do you do? And I was like, I draw. You know, I luckily enough, I had a sketchbook on me. He looked at it and goes, hey, that's not bad. Go talk to the guy, the head of the studio. And the rest is history. And they invited me down to go to the studio and visit. Like, the studio that I was in was called Brightangle Studios. And historically, in the Toronto scene, it was filled with some pretty big names.
What are some of them? Name drop for us.
Francis Manapul,
oh,
Steve
nice.
McNiven, Calvin Andrasovsky, Jay Torres, Arthur De La Cruz, I'm trying to think who else is there. Craig Young, Adrian Alfona, Valentine Delandro.
Good company.
Mike Del Mundo, Marco D'Alfonso. Marco D'Alfonso is my co-op student.
Oh, really? Wow.
So there, that's a slight pedigree of that history.
Yeah,
like,
that's great.
So I have to learn under some pretty big names.
That's awesome. So when you're at a con and you're doing commissions for people,
yep.
What's your favorite character to draw?
I love every character, but I mostly like drawing villains a lot. Like, villains are my thing. Because if you make a villain really look cool and crazy and evil, when the villain actually beats him, it elevates that hero to that same level. It's like, I was always compared to being Darth Vader meeting Luke Skywalker first time you see Darth Vader, baddest man in the universe. Luke Skywalker, little farm boy on Tatooine.
Right.
There's no way he's gonna win. There's an uphill battle for him. So as I always say, it's like, you build up a great hero by creating a great villain, a scary villain.
So, with having said that, which character do you think has those best villains that really elevate him?
Oh, Batman. Easy. Batman, Spider-Man, maybe the Flash.
Yeah,
the Rogues Gallery is strong. That makes the character really strong. Like, Superman's Rogues Gallery is pretty weak in comparison to his power, but he's just too overly powerful for his own good.
It's true. People always say they have a challenge writing for Superman because of that, but Batman,
yeah.
They find pretty easy.
He's just a man. He's got a man that a lot of things about the characters, like, if you look at Batman's characters, because Batman's origin is in sort of psychology and scarring. A lot of his villains represent the same thing. They're all very scarred emotionally, psychologically. Even Spider-Man, his powers are based on animal traits, and that's therefore a lot of his villains are animalistic in their nature. So a lot of the things represent the same thing, along the same lines of what they do. It's like, okay, if you're going to have if they're mirror reflections of who they are,
Yeah, absolutely. So if you had your dream gig to work on, what would that character be? What run would you want to have?
Man, it would probably be either two characters. I would either love to draw a book with the Joker in it, or a book with Dr. Doom.
Why?
Those two are my favorite, most favorite villains of all time.
You gotta love what you're gonna draw.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. And it's really cool if you get to draw your two favorite characters repeatedly over and over again.
Yeah, it's true. Do you have a story made up in your head of something you would already want to do with them?
No.
You leave that to the writer.
If I could do that, I would have been a writer.
Okay. So what are some of the things you've been working on yourself, where we can find your work?
I've published two anthologies recently called Monstrosities Volume 1 and 2 through Alternative Comics. I've been published in the Stan Sakai Project, the pinup in there, for Usagi Ujima's the Stan Sakai Trip charity book.
Awesome. So overall, in these past couple years that they've been having the Toronto Comic Con here, it's a little smaller than the Fan Expo, obviously, but how has it grown these last couple years?
Well, they've added 3 days. They've gone from 2 days to 3 days. More celebrities, bigger artist pool. So it's a pretty big show, even though it's only 3 days for the smaller show. It's still pretty comparable to other conventions.
Yeah. Just being in here from last year to this year, I've already seen it grow. It's almost, the capacity of people that are in here, it almost feels like a summertime con. That's great. So will we see you in Fan Expo?
Here's hoping. I hope to be there again for my 15th year now.
Wow, 15 years.
15 years.
Thank you so much for your time, Arvin.
No problem. Thank you.
It's me. It's me too, buddy. We're at the Toronto Comic Con at the Metro Toronto Convention Center now, sitting with Sam Agro. So, Sam, you said that you're a native of Toronto too, or where are you from originally?
Well, I'm originally from southwestern Ontario, a little town called Tilsonburg, Ontario.
Yes, I heard.
Yeah, there's a famous song by Stompin' Tom Connors about our town, and when he had an experience harvesting tobacco there. It's a big tobacco town. The whole area, they grow a lot of tobacco there. So, yeah, I grew up there, and then I went to Sheridan College in Oakville, and went into the animation business. At some point in the mid-80s, I moved to Toronto, and been here pretty much ever since.
Nice. Give us a little bit of your comic book history. What got you into comic books? Were you a big fan as a kid, or was it more just animation?
No, I was absolutely a huge fan of comics when I was a kid, much more than animation. I think I was about 12 years old. A certain issue of The Incredible Hulk, issue 150, there's this great scene in it where The Incredible Hulk rips out the side of a mountain, and I just went, what? He ripped out the side of a mountain? And I was hooked. I was hooked on The Incredible Hulk. I went out that very day and found the issue that came before it and the issue that came after it, because at that time you had to go to the newsstand, and they only maybe had a couple of months available at any given time. It wasn't like now where you could go to a store and get any issue from any time, right?
Right.
And I started collecting the Hulk and buying lots of other comics. I got into FF right away, and Conan the Barbarian when Marvel was doing that comic. I was a huge, huge fan. And I got into animation a little bit later when I was in my later teens. I also got into acting a little bit at the local theater Tilsonburg. And I did a few shows with them. And at one point, I kind of went to... see an animated movie on a date, and I was like, oh, this is like, it's like drawing, but it's also acting.
Right, right.
It's like acting with a pencil. So I got really, really interested in animation at that point, and I studied animation at Sheridan College in Oakville, and I worked in the animation industry as an in-betweener at first, and then later in the storyboard department. And I did that for a long, long time, close to 20 years. And then I kind of oozed over into doing storyboarding for live action film. And that's kind of my job, my day job, if you will. But I still love comics, and I do a lot of indie kind of comics work on the fringes.
Right, right. So do you remember who wrote and drew that Incredible Hulk issue?
It was I believe it was written by Archie Goodwin. I wouldn't want you to quote me on that one, but for sure it was drawn by Herb Trimpe and inked by John Severin. That I know for a fact. And I had that issue signed by Herb Trimpe about four or five years ago. I was able to meet him and have him sign that book for me, and I said, this is the book that started me collecting. It's like, all right.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
so who are your inspirations as a young person? Artistically,
well, I was definitely very into all the Disney animators, of course. But as far as comic books go, my early influences were John Buscema. He was a big influence on me,
especially with the Conan, right?
Yeah, well, when I started buying Conan, it was still Barry Smith, but
okay.
Later on, John Buscema certainly, and I also loved his run on Silver Surfer. Was great, terrific comics, and I was also a huge fan of Jim Steranko and Neil Adams, and you know, sort of all the big guys in the 70s. I was into them all, you know, like any kid that's into comics. I was digging all the big artists at that time, and you know, certainly other influences came along later, but those are kind of the key ones. Jack Kirby is somebody I came to appreciate a little bit later when I was a little bit older. I always thought his stuff looked a little cartoony when I was you know, a teenager.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people say that. What can you explain for people that are listening, what is it that when you look at Jack Kirby's work now, from an artist's perspective, what makes it so, they call him the king, right?
Yeah,
what puts him in that?
Well, I'll tell you. When I was a teenager, I sort of was going for stuff that I thought was drawn a little bit more realistically or representationally, if you will.
Like a Neil Adams.
Yeah, like Neil Adams, and I love that stuff. What's key to Kirby and what I came to appreciate later in my mid-20s and going on into my 30s is the power and the energy and the simplicity of it. And the simplicity, which I didn't like so much when I was a teenager, you know, wanting to be all artistic about it and be very representational, is that simplicity helps add energy to that that powerful pose, and that bold line gives it a certain a kinetic quality that's a little harder to achieve when you're doing something that's drawn a little bit more realistically. So you know, that's, you know, as you age, you learn to appreciate lots of different kinds of art, and I got into lots of different fine art and lots of different classical illustration and stuff that you know, all informs what I do now. But at the time, you know, when you're younger, your vision is a little more narrow, and you're not so you know, not so interested in certain types of art that don't immediately appeal to you.
Right, right. Because I, even for myself, like I always hear people talk about Jack Kirby and how great he was, and I have a hard time myself now appreciating. So I want to hear from a professional to see what it is to look for.
Well, you know what, the bottom line is you like what you like, right? You know, and when you train yourself to do comics, you know, certain things, you'll appreciate things that just a casual reader or even an avid reader won't necessarily appreciate, and nor should they necessarily. I mean, what appeals to you visually and what appeals to you in terms of what a writer does with a story, that's personal to you, and you know, there's no wrong or right about it, really. It's just what you're feeling when you're reading it, and you know, so I'm not the kind of person that says, oh, you have to appreciate Kirby. You
right.
know, I love Kirby. I think he's great. But, you know, if it's not your cup of tea, then you find something that is, and you latch onto that, you know.
True. So give us some of the things you've been working on recently or in the past where people can find your work.
Yeah. Well, probably my biggest credit, and it's kind of a weird credit because it's actually a writing credit, was for about 5 years I wrote... stories for DC's Looney Tunes comic, which of course harkened right back to my animation training. So I got to write, you know, Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and Elmer Fudd and all those great Warner Brothers cartoon characters. And of course, when I was in, you know, college, we loved those cartoons and we really analyzed and looked at what they were doing. So it was really fun for me to write those characters again. And I do both write and draw. So that's like my biggest credit, but more recently the stuff I've been doing has been more indie sort of comics. I did a backup story for Mr. Comics' publication of Revolution Under the Planet of the Apes, and I did a story written by a fellow named San Giacomo. He did a series of short stories in an anthology called Tales of the Starlight Drive-In, and he brought me on as the artist for one of the stories, and that was published by Image Comics. And then I've done a couple of these compilation books, these anthology books called the Monstrosity books, and also Horror in the West, which are published by two local Toronto guys, and distributed through fundraising. You know, people contribute to the book, and then they get the book, or they get extras. What do they call that?
Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's Kickstarter, but there's a word for it. I can't think of it, a phrase for it. Fundraising, internet fundraising. Anyway, I'm showing my age. I'm one of the older guys you're interviewing, probably. So,
okay.
You know, I'm not hip on all the jargon. But anyway, yeah, they have Kickstarter fundraisers for it, and then they publish it that way, and the artists and writers get paid in books, and then we make our money by selling books. And so I've done several stories for those guys, and you know, whatever other sort of indie stuff I can get. And of course, my day job is I still do storyboards for movies and TV.
What, anything you're working on currently as far as storyboarding is concerned?
The last thing I worked on was last fall, and it was actually a documentary on gold, on the history of gold and how gold is mined. But they did these sequences dramatizing historical moments that revolved around gold in some way, and they wanted to storyboard that all out, like Pizarro coming to the New World and trying to find the gold of the Incas or whatever. So they did little dramatizations of those, and I did some storyboarding on those sequences. And probably the most famous movie I ever worked on was a film called Fly Away Home. That's quite a few years ago now, but it's about a little girl who uses an ultralight aircraft to fly geese, to show geese how to migrate. And then I also worked on several installments of the Saw movie franchise, the horror movie franchise. I worked on every episode, starting with episode 3. So the first two were boarded by other people, and on the Saw 3, I came on board, and I boarded all the rest of them, 4, 5, 6, and 7. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Keeping you busy.
Yeah, yeah. That's done now, unfortunately. That was a good job. Every year, I got to go and storyboard a Saw movie. So.
Yeah. So, seeing as busy as you can be in the illustrating and the animation, all that stuff, do you still find time to enjoy reading and comics and collecting comics?
Yeah.
Or is that...
Yeah, well, I also do a lot of writing. I do a lot of prose writing, too, so... you know, as a writer, you have to be a reader. It's very important that you read lots and lots of stories and find out what other people are doing and how they're doing it. I've always loved to read.
So, pardon the interruption. At this point, I didn't realize that my device had stopped recording, and I got lost in the conversation with Sam. So, from this point on, he's going to be discussing some of the short stories and published things that he's writing and working on.
First short story this year, and it's going to be appearing in a book called Modern Bestiary, which is a collection of short stories that all involve magical creatures or monsters, but set in a modern setting somehow. So that's quite an interesting book. And I also sold an essay this year as well. This is an interesting meta thing. It's a book about comics based on the Planet of the Apes movies. So I was a huge, huge fan of Marvel's black and white Planet of the Apes magazine back in the 70s, and I wrote an essay about that series of comics, and there are essays in the book about all the other runs of comics that are based on Planet of the Apes by different companies that are all written by different people who are fans of them. And that book is coming out, should be coming out very soon, actually. And I believe it's called Comics on the Planet of the Apes. I'd have to double check that. But I think they had another working title, but I think that's the final print title.
Cool. Yeah. So in this day and age where we're living in now, it's like the age of the geek where, right, where we've won, basically, right? All our movies are out there. The conventions everywhere are huge. What's it like to now be working in this industry during this time? Is it exciting? Are you enjoying the movies as much? Or?
Well, I think it would be more exciting if I were getting more mainstream work. You know, I'm still sort of toiling around on the fringes. But I think what's exciting about it for me as a fan,
yeah,
is, you know, that I get to go to the movies and see the characters that I love. You know, and there have been some adaptations of the characters that I haven't been so fond of, but there have been a lot that I have really enjoyed, and I certainly love what they've been doing with Captain America and the Avengers, and you know, that stuff's been really, really enjoyable, and I love those characters, so that was great. Professionally speaking, I think it's still a real challenge for people who want to work in comics, because there are so many people who want to do it, and there are so few jobs to go around that actually pay money. But because of social media now, people are also able to self-publish in a different way, like the Monstrosity books that I worked on. They're raising the money to do the printing before doing the book, and that's a new kind of model to kind of create a comic book with, and I think that is going to allow a lot of people to maybe not make a lot of money with their books, but certainly get their work out there more effectively. And, I think that's very, very exciting, and I've really enjoyed taking part in some of those books being handled by other people, and I'm also considering doing my own at some point. So
that's great. So when you're at your table and you've got fans coming over to ask for commissions, what is your favorite character to draw, and what's your least favorite character to draw?
Well, I'll tell you, my favorite character, of course, is the Incredible Hulk, because he's always been my favorite character.
Okay.
And I also really love to draw Batman. I'll draw Batman at the drop of a hat. My least favorite characters to draw are the ones that have really, really complicated costumes. Because when you're at a convention, you have limited time to do a sketch, and you don't want to spend an hour and a half on it, because you're only getting a certain amount of money for it. And right, that sounds a little bit mercenary, I know.
No,
but
it's true.
You know, you're just trying to maximize how many drawings you can do in the day. So for me, I always have real trouble with Spider-Man's webbing, the webbing on his suit. You know,
that's good to know. I almost asked you for one this year.
I have a guy who comes every year, and he always wants a Spider-Man. And it's like, okay, I'll do it. I'm happy to do it, but it's a little time consuming to get all that webbing correct.
Right, right.
And the other one that I find difficult to draw, that I get a lot of requests for, is the Thing from the Fantastic Four, because of course he's got all those little rocks, right? And it's just time consuming, and it's not an issue of I don't enjoy drawing it. I do, but it just takes me longer than the other sketches. So those are the two that I never really like to have a request for.
Make you cringe. So all these years that you've been coming to the convention, I've seen you now for a couple of years. How have you seen it change or expand? What makes Toronto unique when it comes to its comic culture?
Well, what's amazing to me is how many people are coming now. I first started doing this convention, what is actually the fall convention, the Fan Expo, the big Fan Expo event. I started doing that 16 years ago.
Wow.
And it was in a tiny little space, and there were maybe 5,000 people came for the whole event. And now it's thousands and thousands of people coming through the door. Even this event, which is the smaller of the two events that they have every year, you know, they're getting thousands and thousands of people through the door. Now, not all of those people are diehard fans, but clearly fandom has grown. Comics fandom is just much bigger than it was before. And, of course, you know, fandom for all kinds of other things, like the other things that are represented at the Fan Expo, like anime and gaming and horror and, you know, all that, all those other genre things that people love. All of that just seems to have grown so large now, and that's the most significant change that I've seen. And the other thing that I've seen, the other thing is that you know, the comics companies and the movie companies are taking more taking greater advantage of these events to promote their movies and comics and so forth. So that's an interesting change too. Like you know, you would never see people coming up from Marvel or DC back in the early days, you know, but now it's very common for editors and producers to come up and visit these events. So that's a significant change as well.
Thank you so much for your time, Sam.
You're most welcome.
Always good to see you at the con, and you always give us great, you draw me great pictures that I put on my wall. All right. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right.
So that was Marvin Law and Sam Agro. Thanks again so much, guys, for giving us your time and geeking out with us for a little bit. And really all the best of success to them in any of their endeavors upcoming. And I really hope to see them soon at another event. So Daff J or Lady J, what are some of your, you also brought your Peter Parker camera with you to the con.
I think I am the designated Cave of Solitude photographer.
Okay.
Cause
tell us some of your, the things that you shot, the heroes or villains you saw.
Saw an actual R2-D2.
Okay.
I did the whole, is that what it even does? I don't even know. Like, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, it actually walked around. It was life size, and it spun, and it did the whole wah thing, right? There were stormtroopers there, so I took a picture of the stormtroopers. In the ship where the big chair is.
Oh, like they had like a set type of thing of the Emperor's chair from Star Wars.
That's right.
Yeah.
I saw Magneto.
Okay.
I saw Super Mario, but I didn't take a picture of him because he looks a little creepy. My favorite costume on the Sunday that I saw, apparently you said though she was there all 3 days, was Cassandra Cain.
Yeah, and with she was with Superboy.
She was with Superboy.
Yeah, it was cool.
They were the best costumes that were there. Like they,
from the sounds of it, you sound like you'd want to do cosplay. Like, would you dress up? Would you go all out for this? Because people always ask me when I tell them that I go to a con, they're like, "Do you dress up?" And I wear my T-shirts. I always have a T-shirt to wear. But you sound like, would you put together a whole costume, Lady J?
Yeah, I could probably do a Princess Leia get up.
Would you do that in the bikini?
With the buns.
Or with the white dress?
No, the white dress would be bomb. You have the hood. You can put on the hood. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope. Yeah, and then you look away and you turn up. Who else did I saw Rogue.
Rogue was there. That was a good one.
Yeah. She even said to me, "Or do you want to take your picture with me?" I'm like, no.
No.
Because I just wanted it to be her, right?
Yeah.
Because I was wearing my, like I said, I was wearing my cape with my shirt, but I was wearing jeans.
I told you should have wore your cowl.
Yeah, well, the last time I wore my cowl, I think the first and only time I wore my cowl was when I went to go see Batman.
Dark Knight. Yeah.
And I wore that on the street.
I think you wore it through a good portion of the movie, too.
I wore it through the movie. I think I wore it through dinner. I went to go retrieve my friend's glasses, Little Sparrow's glasses at the restaurant.
Because
she left them there just before the movie, so we were rushing.
Right.
People gave me high fives and stuff. Anyway, what else did I see? I saw a Superman. I'm very tall.
Superman should be tall.
Yeah, but he was almost too skinny.
What about my favorite interaction you had with one of the cosplayers was Poison Ivy, who tell us about that.
Okay, so like I have my camera, right? Oh, we also saw the Suicide Squad.
Did we?
Yeah, I have a picture of it.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah. So anyway, I'm walking and I'm like, you know, taking pictures of everyone and I'm having a ball, and then I'm like seeing this chick walk towards me, and I'm like, I know her. Like I've met her before. And then I'm like, hey. And I'm thinking, like, I know you probably thought like we ran into someone we knew. And I'm like, you're Poison Ivy. So like I'm all excited, right? Because she actually did it justice, I think.
She did a good
job. She had the leaves on her neck. Like, it was pretty cool. And I was impressed. And I'm like, can I take your picture? She's like, yeah, sure. And she was holding this guy's hand. And obviously, that's her boyfriend. So, oh my goodness, this story's going a little too long.
Yeah.
So then, so I'm talking to her, and then I realize I'm being rude. I'm like completely disregarding the guy.
So, well, was he? Was he dressed?
So I looked at him.
Dressed up as somebody. Obviously, yeah, he's dressed
up too, right? He has this mustard shirt on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, and he's like, hello, and I'm like, you're Box friend. I don't think he was impressed at all.
He was wearing the Star Trek shirt, Captain Kirk's Star Trek shirt. Yeah. And you could remember the fact that he was the captain of the U.S. Enterprise.
Well, and that was his response, apparently, under his breath as I was taking a picture of Poison Ivy.
Completely dejected.
Like, he was, like, he let go of her hand, and I'm like, let me take a picture of you. And then he's, like, you know, going off to the side. But then you heard him under his breath say, yep, that's me, Spock's friend. It's not like I was the captain of anything. Like, he was so cheesed.
And then you said to him, oh, I'm sorry, I could take your picture too.
And then,
like, but no, forget it.
Yeah, he wasn't like bitter about it. He was kind of like, look, she put more effort into it. I just put on a shirt. And I'm like, yeah, you did. Too bad for you.
See you later. Enjoy the con. Yeah. That was hilarious.
That was a funny interaction, I think. But
yeah.
My only regret was not getting Cassandra Cain, man. That was a wicked costume.
Yeah. That was, because it was, like, top to bottom. It was real dedication, real detail, and then the mouth was covered. Yeah. Like, it was... It felt like it was straight out of a book, right?
Yeah.
That was the cool part about it.
I think that's what happens, though. Like, these cosplay things are fun, but I think when they're done well. Sometimes you see a Superman that shouldn't be Superman. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, me and Jay Siegel on Friday saw... I don't know if you know what this would look like, but it was Wolverine and Weapon X from the Weapon X comic book story, where that's where he gets his adamantium put into him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, the image of it is basically him in no clothes wearing this like helmet and all of these wires connected to him. So this guy was cosplaying as Weapon X, but he was in a Speedo.
Whoa!
Nothing but a Speedo, and he had one hand with the claw, so it was cool, because he wasn't, like, complete.
Yeah.
And he had the helmet on. But after a while, you keep running into a guy that's, like, in his underwear, like, naked. And he had, like, he was hairless. Which was a problem, because Wolverine is hairy, so if you're gonna pull off the Wolverine, you gotta have some body hair, and this guy was, like, a peach.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, one of those not fuzzy peaches. Like, so... Yeah, that becomes a little bit like, okay, I can't escape this guy. And then we saw Princess Peach, who was a little risque for Princess Peach.
Oh.
Yeah, she just had the top part on and she was wearing a thong.
What?
Yeah, it was kind of like, whoa, you happy you didn't have any kids with me at that time?
Yeah, but I mean, there's, like I said, I think the...
It's extremes.
Mm-hmm.
You got these extremes.
Yeah, there's a couple of Sailor Moons that need to just...
Stop.
Settle down there now.
So if you were going to cosplay, what would you go as?
I like the whole top to bottom cover up thing. Cause, you
Sandra
know,
Cain?
Because
no one will know it's you.
No, but that's like you get that oomph that you can just start doing stuff. Like if you, I'd go as Spider-Man, man. Like I just, well, I have the chest, but like, you know what I mean? Like when you have
Spider-Girl.
Like a top to bottom costume situation, like... Who cares?
You could do a Spider-Girl because there is a version of Peter Parker where he has a daughter.
Okay, there you go.
And
I had no idea. What?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, and she's in the Spider-Man costume, but she's a girl.
But that's what I'm
and
saying.
People
like,
would
when
say,
you,
hey, that's Spider-Girl. They,
when
they'd
you
love
have
it.
That mask, you know, to hide behind, like, you walk in there like a boss. Like, you don't care. You can just work. You just do it.
Would you, if you were Spider-Girl, would you bring a skateboard with you so you could, like, glide across the floor, like, nonchalant and...
I'd probably just walk around with the skateboard. I'm not going to look like an idiot falling into the... Like, I can't glide anywhere.
Not glide, like, slide, like, skateboarding, but, like, go low on it and, like, have someone push you so it looks like you're a spider climbing a wall. I saw someone do that. It was a really cool...
What? Explain this to me. I don't get it.
So there was a Spider-Man a couple years ago. Or no, last year, actually. Same con, but you know how Spider-Man has that thing of, like, crawling, right? Like low
yeah.
to the ground.
Yeah.
So
oh,
he
so
did
they just
it.
Put their
he was on a skateboard and it looked like he was crawling like a spider, but having like a smooth movement across the floor.
Oh, I see.
Like that, yeah. That was a cool thing he did.
That's too hard though, because then I have to get up and I have to sift through the boxes and then I have to get back down. Like, where am I gonna put the stuff that I buy?
My favorite.
Also, remember the Spider-Man that was in the middle of the escalator and his webs were all like.
Oh, that poor guy. He had like a whole thing of webs
yeah.
that he wrapped up and they had fallen and
yeah.
he was trying to put it all together. You're just like, oh, man.
Like,
and
the
so
security
sad.
Guard is like, hey, go get over there. Go move, move.
And
he's
totally
like,
trying to like get this together. Like, I gotta sell this. I'm Spider-Man. My webs are all like falling.
And then
apart.
He just had to take the escalator going up.
That's the funny part, though, right? Is when you see everybody cosplaying, and it's Superman
mm-hmm.
taking the escalator. It just looks so ridiculous, but it's fun. So, would you do it again,
Good
Dav
times.
J?
Yeah, I'd do it again.
We're gonna post some pictures of Dav J's that she took of all the different cosplayers that she caught up with and took photos of, and some of the sketch duel photos that we took. And what else? What else do we have? You're going to have to go on the website. So speaking of which, that's a good segue. We want you guys to give us feedback. We want you to interact with us. Hit us up at caveofsolitude.com. Leave us a comment on our website. Send us an email at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. And we've got a Facebook page that's going to be up. And we're going to also... get a Twitter page that Daph J is going to be the one to answer everybody's comment. I just sprung that on you.
What?
You're completely stuck. I'm happy you had that reaction. No, we're gonna reach out a little bit more and have a little bit more interaction, different types of social media to get the name out there more. And yeah, so that's this year's Comic-Con 2015 in Toronto. I'm really happy that you came with me this year. It was a blast.
It was fun.
It was good. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you again to Sam Agro and Marvin Law for being so generous with their time and to sit down and chat with us for a bit while we were at the con, taking me behind the scenes and giving me some VIP access, as it were. So thanks again, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you soon.
For this damn interview. He told you to come back. The door was wide open.
Okay. This is what happened. So we had a good conversation when I went to see him. Even Jace, I was like, hey man, that was a pretty good conversation. It went well. Like, we were having bathroom humor. Like, that's how how like cool our conversation was. Like, it was like not personal, but like friendly, right? Very friendly.
That's so weird.
I know, right? But he's like a storyteller, so I'm like, okay. That's why I felt comfortable enough to ask him, because he was like being really jovial with me. So I went back at the end of the con, and I'm thinking, let me give this a shot. Let me try. And he looked tired, and I was kind of lurking around, wondering if I was going to... Because I had a stack of books that I wanted him to sign, but I got to pay for each signature. I'm like...
It's like $20, right?
Yeah. And last con, I geeked out when I saw him, because I didn't know he was going. It was a last-minute thing, and I spent like a good amount of money on him. On his pictures and prints. They're in our room now, you can see. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. But then he's eating an ice cream with his wife, right?
She was having ice cream too?
She was having he took it from her and he's like eating it as everyone's like dispersing and they're closing up shop for his stand. And she's, like, trying to take the ice cream away from him and trying to put his jacket on him and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, should I do it? Should I do it? But then he's, like, really into this ice cream. I don't want to disrupt the guy from eating his ice cream at the end of the day. Like, he's probably starving. Who wants to be the guy that interrupts the...
He would have resented you.
Yeah.
Being that guy.
What kind of guy would I have been?
You would have been the guy that was taking him up on his offer.
Yeah, but then I also would have been the guy who would have been, like, interrupting the lick. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I just felt like he probably would have said, this guy's so annoying. So I didn't want to be that
lick. Yeah, but I know what you mean. But, like, when are you going to get that?
I will get it again.
We will get the it look again. Right now is so intense.
I will go next time to the Expo. Fan Expo with a press pass.
You know what you should say when you go back? You should say when you go back, like, Mr. Adams, we talked before. Didn't he say to you, if you were to talk to him, he really likes science?
Yeah, but I don't know.
Just some random whatever. But then you should tell him, like, you know, I came back. You should tell him straight up. I came back, you know, last con, and you said that you might give me a little blurb at the end of the day, but I saw you. You know, I didn't want to interrupt you and your ice cream. So, like, that way let him know that you were considerate of him.
Or I was just a stalker watching you eat ice cream. Like, really? And he wants to talk about science, but, like, he considers himself a
science. You should ask him if he watches...
Arrow?
No, Big Bang Theory, then.
That's not the same type of science he wants to talk about.
How do you know? Does it matter? You don't want to talk, you don't want to get in depth with the guy because you don't know where it's going to take you. But, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, oh, so do you like physicists? Because they're all into the comic world, and it's a, you know, you never know.
That'd be the segue.
You should get him an ice cream when you go see him. That's what you gotta do. You come with a cone.
Or a cup. Yeah, nice cup with napkins and everything.
Mr. Adams, here you go. I came by to say hello.
That's the key to Neil Adams' heart. Mm. Some ice cream.